welcome to The Dreaming Machine. Today we're talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender, Season 1. This is Joe.
And this is Amy.
So the background to this is I hadn't seen Avatar at all until it came onto Netflix in 2020.
I've been dying to do this with you because it's always so nice when someone's not seen a show this good.
When I've mentioned to people that I've not seen it, people seem really shocked, especially given their knowledge of my love of animation. I just missed it at the time. I have no logical explanation for missing it.
Honestly, I missed it when it was first coming out. I wasn't introduced to it until a few years ago, but it's absolutely fantastic. And now I get to feel what the person who introduced me to it got to feel.
Yeah, so you got the eyes of a newbie here. Full disclosure, in the preparation for recording this episode, I was so enjoying the series that I went ahead and watched season 2 as well.
Yeah.
This will be spoiler-free about anything after season 1, though, and we're just going to focus on the events of season 1 and what our thoughts were.
Yeah.
So spoiler alert, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And what really stood out for me was, for what is quote-unquote a kid show, I found it unexpectedly complex and dark, like throughout. And there were lots of plot twists and really had me on edge about what would happen throughout the whole series.
And that's something that really doesn't let up with this show. It's always keeping you guessing.
It really, really is. And there's so many incredible developments. My other main takeaway as well is that the three main characters are fantastic.
Yeah, initially you might not like click with all of them right away, but you really start to care about all of them by the end of the season.
I agree with you, Amy, about, in particular, Sokka. At first, I found him slightly irritating.
He's grating to begin with.
I know that's meant to be his character trait, but he was my least favourite of the three. But he ended up being one of my favourites by the end of season one.
For someone who starts out quite heavily as the comic relief, he ends up having quite a lot of depth to his character explored.
For sure. There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of developments, especially with his romantic entanglements, I think. And actually, when he started to grow on me was when he started to support Aang, and he became a lot more likeable from that point onwards. But also his logicalness, for want of a better word. Mm. You know, the episode when they meet the fortune teller, and he's the only one who says, well, we need to be logical about this. We need to look to reason. How he gets frustrated by all the distractions as they go through. I probably identified with him most as a character.
Yeah, as the only one who doesn't have bending abilities, I think he is very much the more grounded of the rest of them and sticks with trying to be practical about things.
And they get a lot of comic value about his lack of bending abilities.
Mm.
So I really enjoyed that as well. Having said that, in terms of the characters, one person steals the show for me.
We all know who this is going to be.
I think you can guess who it'll be, yes.
I'm sitting here drinking a pot of tea right now. I think I know who it is.
Uncle Iroh is fantastic. He absolutely steals the show for me.
Iroh is absolutely incredible.
It's just a combination of so many things, if that makes sense.
Mm.
He's incredibly smart and strategic and clever, but he's had enough experiences to go with the flow and to have a calm outlook on life. I mean, when we first meet him, he's playing a game, isn't he? A board game.
Paisho?
Yes, and he's got that obsession with tea, which is fantastic. That's just his way of coping with the events, and that's his like wise, calm outlook on life. Plus, he's just hilarious as well, I found, throughout the show. But he's got these great nuggets of wisdom throughout, and he'd be a fantastic mentor for anyone.
Which he's trying to be right at the point where we first meet him, all the way there in the first episode.
No, for sure. And you end up learning later on that there's a deeper meaning to why he's latched onto Zuko and the importance of their relationship. But it's great how the show starts off by showing them as being from the firebending nation and being seen as the bad guys, basically. But he's so likable, and there's so much development that goes on from that first episode onwards. It's just a joy to watch, really.
I think it's one of those cases similar to what we would later see with She-Ra, where it really helps to go in depth with the antagonists from an early point in your story, so that you get a lot more of their side of things. And even though they're wrong about things, you get an understanding of why they're like they are. And Zuko's a prime example of that.
Picking up on that point, I guess if we look at She-Ra, like, the parallels are probably Catra and Shadow Weaver, arguably.
Oh, Iroh is... Shadow Weaver is not in the same league as Iroh.
No, for sure, but it's about, like, getting to know the antagonists early on and seeing the depth of their characters. But Uncle Iroh, he is completely different as a person, though. He's just so goddamn likable.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, he helps to give a perspective there that makes the fact that Zuko is so unlikable there at the beginning is tempered by having Iroh there. Because Iroh's always trying to get Zuko to understand his outlook on life.
Yeah, and Zuko is just a typical teenager who's not quite willing to listen, and he has, like, too much family baggage as well, I think.
He's obsessed with his father's approval.
Yeah. It's hard to say much else, really, isn't it? And that drives so much, really, I think. I mean, he's even got a physical, like, mark, like reflecting the lack of approval he has from his father.
Mm.
But even then, even though he is clearly, you know, the antagonist, the negative, like, influence, the bad guy, essentially, at the very start, he's still a great character. You're interested to find out, like, why he's on this desperate search. And there's a lot more depth added to his character as the season went on, I felt.
Absolutely. From the beginning, you want to know more about this guy who's hunting the Avatar.
And I think, the other, like, general themes that were really positive, I thought, is kind of expanding on what we've just said there, the world building and the kind of the sense of logic to the world, and so understanding the different nations and the history of where they've all come from and all the characters and how they interact with each other is very consistent and very immersive, I think.
Yeah, they put a lot of effort into clearly establishing the different cultures, the different styles of bending that came from them. It's a world that has a hard magic system. That's one of the big things whenever you're world building for any kind of fantasy setting. You're either looking at a soft magic system where essentially anything goes and you can just make up something on the fly, or a hard magic system, which Avatar very much leans into with bending. It's clearly explained how different schools of bending work, and therefore, you know, we get to experience that through Aang learning them all, and how it's different every time, and how he has trouble learning some of them. And these reflect the different nations that grew up around the different groups of benders.
I think soft magic shows in general drive me mad sometimes, where there's a problem and they just magically overcome it with no background, with no indication that they could solve it, if you see what I mean. So I definitely gravitate more to a show like Avatar, where I know the rules and I know the potential strategies from the start.
And occasionally it can throw you curveballs where someone figures something out that still works within the rules, but it wasn't something you would initially have expected.
I think that's a genius of the show, that they can have those twists and those curveballs in there, but they feel earned and they don't feel out of place. And so you can buy it and go with it as a show. And I think without that, it would potentially fall apart. So there's just so much effort put in on behalf of the writers to make that kind of thing work. Mm. One thing I didn't really expect going in, which I know sounds silly for what is an action-adventure show, but the action is absolutely spectacular. I think it's one of the best animations I've ever seen for the quality of the action sequences, the way they're directed, the excitement of it.
Yes.
It's just absolutely superb.
This is also somewhere where that world building comes in as well. If you look at the various bending styles when they're included in fight scenes, you'll notice that they're all based on different martial arts, and they've actually looked into stuff when deciding how to animate the characters when they're doing different kinds of bending. And that adds a lot to the show.
I totally agree. I mean, you can tell that the creators and writers had a lot of brainstorming sessions, just working out, you know, those different martial arts styles and what could be done with the different bending styles, and being very creative in terms of how the usage of that. And which I know sounds like an obvious thing that writers should do, but they often don't. When I've seen other shows and movies where they have all these potential and they just don't follow through on it.
Mm.
I mean, I've seen movies like Looper, like Green Lantern and things like that, where they've got all this potential with the core concept, but they just don't follow through on it. And they clearly, there's so much creativity, I think. And that's because they put the effort with the world, but in with the world building, as you say.
Green Lantern gets a lot of gets a lot of flack for how it's like you have the power to do literally anything that you can imagine, and the most common thing is manifesting a big green glowing fist to punch someone. Like, that's the extent of your imagination, really.
I mean, they did that weird car thing with the car rides on the track. So it's either like totally unimaginative or just really, really random. It's just the things like that are a warning to us all that a show like this doesn't have to have the quality it does. And so I really do appreciate the effort they put in to make it so compelling, you know.
Mm.
And I think the animation is kind of the animation works great too. I think it's got an anime light style to it. Is that fair to say?
A lot of people saw it initially and assumed it was some kind of imported anime. They weren't aware it was an entirely Western creation.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly influenced by certain anime.
Absolutely.
But it's kind of got that, it's got that kind of, it feels like a hybrid, I think. But you can,
yeah.
So it's not exactly an anime itself, but you can feel that influence with it. But it's got these, it's kind of Nickelodeon mixed with anime, basically.
Yeah.
And so I just think the animation works well for the show. And then, as I said before, the action sequences are really exciting and imaginative and compelling. I was thinking about the episodes and which ones were the standout episodes for me. And I realised that I love anything with a kind of message or that acts as a parable. Like, I love shows like, you know, The Twilight Zone or any kind of sci-fi where there's like
a deeper
message or reflection of wider society. You know, I admit it, I'm a geek. I love that kind of thing.
I can think there's probably a few. Yeah, I can imagine there's probably a few episodes here that are probably going to have made an impression on you then.
I made a list here of like which ones really stood out for me. I mean, I loved the Great Divide episode about the two warring tribes and these two communities that hate each other, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the main trio are trying to like guide them through this deadly canyon, showing the different interpretations of what happened historically and how that manifested itself in terms of the current conflict was very clever. And the resolution was amazing. It was like kind of really funny, but also quite clever and twisty as well, the resolution of that episode. So I loved that one. The episode with the fortune teller I thought was great too.
The fortune teller.
it was just seeing the society governed by that kind of by that reassuring presence. Like, I thought it was really clever and like had that kind of meaning to it. But with each of these things, are quite light and funny with it. Which like kind of sells the premise and makes you go with it, I think. I also love them when they meet meet the inventor based in the temple in the sky. The Northern Air Temple. And I thought that one was fantastic because once again, very imaginative, the flying sequences, meet some great new characters.
I felt that was a really good sort of follow-up to the Southern Air Temple right at the beginning of the season, because you have the Southern Air Temple at the beginning and the Northern Air Temple at the end. And the Southern Air Temple, you have Aang confronting the fact that his entire people have been wiped out. He is literally, as the title of the show says, the last airbender. And that was really heavy stuff there.
Very heavy.
Especially to throw in right at the beginning of a show like this. And him having to face the fact that everyone he knew was killed by people who were trying to make sure that they got him. And it wiped out his entire culture just to try and get him. And then at the other end of the season, you have the Northern Air Temple, where he arrives at another air temple and there's people there now. And they've built a whole new life for themselves, the people who are there. Sort of on the remains of what his people left behind 100 years ago.
I mean, you see Aang's absolute horror, really. They built all these steampunk style, like industrial contraptions, like over the remains of his people. The only relics that's left of his community, you know. And I think you're right. It's incredibly powerful stuff, and it links so well with the Southern Air Temple earlier in the season. And then the conflict of the inventor they run into, and the conflict of how he survives in that world. I just thought was very. I love that kind of stuff, basically. I love that kind of thing where there's that kind of that added complexity to it and added meaning, really. But they do it in a way that doesn't sell the show short or like hit you over the head with the message. It just happens very naturally.
Yeah.
And I love how they're willing just to leave things open-ended as well. I thought that's what the episode showed, where there might be a big fight. You might push back the Fire Nation, but they're very clear that the conflict's not necessarily over when the gang leave and move on. And there's still this conflict there.
Life still goes on. And when they're not there, more things are going to happen. You have that sort of all the way back to the very, again, fairly early in the season with them encountering the Kyoshi Warriors, who are one of my favourite groups in the show.
They're pretty badass, aren't they?
They're fantastic. Which also ties nicely into the legacy of other avatars. Because, of course, they were founded by Avatar Kyoshi. I do like the episodes that give us more insight into the Avatar's past lives.
I did enjoy that kind of stuff. I think I kind of picked up on that a bit more when I rewatched some moments of season one, if that makes sense. Because I started to connect things together a little bit more. There's obviously a deep like history in terms of the role of the Avatar.
And what the impact the Avatar's had on the world in the past.
Yeah. So I agree that's very powerful.
Which you definitely get here with, like, Avatar Roku essentially taking on the role of of mentor to Aang once you get a little way into the first season during the winter solstice.
I think that moment's like quite important really, for the show, just to like open up the world really, and just give it like a direction of travel really, in terms of the plot. I thought as well, I really loved the episode with Jet and his gang in the forest.
Yes.
I mean, that is some pretty dark stuff for, like, you know, a quote-unquote Nickelodeon, like, kids show, a Nickelodeon show, I thought. Mm-hmm.
And I also like that a lot of the time when it comes to characters like this, they're the sort of characters who'd be introduced for a one-off episode quite often in a lot of other shows. But with characters like this, they can end up recurring in different seasons. Just like the Kyoshi Warriors.
They don't take the lazy option. So they'll have an episode. So, you know, that episode's very much, when we first meet Jet, it's very much about, you know, this freedom fighter group. But, you know, mm-hmm. what length do you go to? Like, do the ends always justify the means?
Yeah. And then later they can give you what the consequences were.
Well, exactly, yeah. So they...
To what we didn't see on screen.
But with a lot of both pathos, but also humour as well. And you know, the kind of relationship as well between Jet and Katara and that romance. So there's a lot of humour there, but also the pathos and the message there. But they leave it open-ended again. Like, they don't just say, that's it. They have the bravery just to let that keep going on and look at the consequences of that and return to that later on.
Yeah. I think a major theme of this show is sort of coming back to deal with the consequences of your action or your inaction. Particularly when we get to certain characters. But a lot of that's probably stuff that's better discussed when talking about later seasons.
Yeah. Now I've seen season two, I totally agree about that. Yeah.
You have a lot more context for that now, yeah. But I think for example, Zuko's story is an example of that, because a lot of the decisions he makes end up coming back to have an impact on him. And Iroh, again, is there to try and help him process that and potentially to try and warn him off things that he knows are going to hurt Zuko.
I mean, Zuko, as well as his dad, he's obsessed with his honour.
And
I think this show really highlights the fallacy of like chasing some destiny or some honor thing, and not doing what's best for yourself.
Mm. Yourself or the people you care about.
Yeah.
This comes back to Iroh's regrets.
Uncle Iroh is such a good character. I know we've said that already, but he's so goddamn good.
He knows where focusing on your honor gets you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. He's, you know, he's paid the price for that, really, and he's the most well-adjusted guy in the whole Fire Nation because he's gone through that journey. Plus, he's just such a fantastic character, as I keep saying. But he, like, his personality is partly informed, I think, by those experiences, as you say. I mean, I could just have spent the whole episode talking about Uncle Iroh, to be honest.
Easily.
Let's raise a cup of tea in his honour.
Almost finished an entire pot in his honour.
I think there were some other episodes that stood out for me, actually. I thought the first... I really enjoyed it from the start, but the first episode that really, really impressed me was The King of Umashu.
Ah, Bumi.
When Aang goes through the trials, basically, when he meets the king. So the trials are fantastic, you know, very entertaining to watch. But, you know, the plot of the episode and the revelation at the end.
His final question.
Yes, is fantastic. And that made me think this was a truly special show I was watching.
Mm.
I mean, the earlier episodes are great too, but I thought that one really stood out for me early on, I think. Okay. It's like, you know, this show's going to keep me on my toes throughout the whole thing. Like, so, you know, the character's great, the action's great, but the world building's great. But that episode was like, okay, I can't just settle in. I got to pay attention. And some interesting, unexpected things are going to happen.
It was a little refreshing after the events of the Southern Air Temple to a couple of episodes later find out that at least one person Aang knows from his childhood is still alive.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, as you said before, it's devastating, really, when you think everyone he knew is gone, and it's a completely different world he's woken up to. He's got those feelings of guilt as well about the abandonment and not being there. It's like, not only is it very clever, but it's quite touching as well, and good for him to have that some kind of connection.
Absolutely.
He's got that connection with Appa as well, of course, his flying bison.
And Appa's just wonderful. I may have a cuddly sky bison.
No way. Really?
Yep. Mine is called Fred.
I mean, they're delightful creatures. And it's just...
they're adorable.
I mean, they kind of got that going through the show, don't they? They've got these weird amalgamation of different animals.
Yeah. I mean, they start that right from the beginning with the, like, penguin seals.
Yeah.
And this will always be, like, a running theme in this show. But yeah, you missed out one other animal companion, which is somewhere where I feel after She-Ra, and one of your complaints about season 5, that they introduced the cute animal companion right at the end of the show. Chapter 3, Southern Air Temple. They introduced the cute animal.
Momo.
Momo.
I still think we don't get enough Momo. No, we do get enough Momo.
And Momo ends up being quite important in a few places later on.
I mean, and I think Momo and Appa have a weirdly cute relationship as well.
They do. They have a lovely relationship between them, which really gets emphasised in season 2. So when we get to that, that's going to be... I mean, we'll be on an entire episode with just talking about those two if we could.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Without spoiling anything. A lot happens. I think there were some other episodes that really stood out for me too. I thought the Blue Spirit episode, when Aang meets a medicine woman and then comes across this masked sword wielder.
Mm.
That was another episode where it's like, you can't, the show's going to keep you on your toes. And once again, the action sequences are just so imaginative and engrossing.
That there's a very sort of Crouching Tiger-y inspiration there in some of it, in some of the Blue Spirit stuff.
Definitely. And there's no there's never any easy way out of these fights either. there's always some complications as they try to battle their way, you know? And there's just the introduction of mysteries, like, throughout the whole season. So the masked swordsman and the warriors we talked about before, like where they came from.
Mm. The Kyoshi warriors, their backstory, and the story of the Avatar who founded them. That's gone on to be such a big thing, even outside of the shows, that in extended material. Kyoshi is possibly the fan favorite of all the past Avatars, and. Yeah. She only appears a couple of times directly in the show.
And it just works so well, really. Yeah, she's a fantastic character. I think the other episodes that stood out for me were the finale, actually.
the siege.
Yeah, and I've watched that a couple of times, and I preferred it the second time, weirdly, even though I knew what was going to happen. Because I thought, oh, okay, it's a big action episode. That's the end of it. It'll be fairly straightforward. But actually, a lot of stuff happens. There's a lot of developments that really set up the future of the show as well, I think.
They do a lot there as well in the episode immediately preceding the two-part finale and that finale to really establish the culture clash between the Northern and Southern Water tribes as well. Like, the Northern Water tribe has successfully fought off the Fire Nation's attacks, because remember, the Fire Nation assumed Aang was dead. So the reason they've been raiding the water tribes for so long was that they assumed the next Avatar had been born when Aang died. And so they were trying to, that's why they were taking all of the waterbenders from the Southern tribe. Which is something, like, again, that's one of those really dark elements to the show.
And yeah, and it's just, as you said before, showing the show's all about the ramifications of, like, action and inaction, and, like, the repercussions they have. It's, yeah, it's incredibly dark. It really, really is dark when you think about it. And that
and Katara has to deal with the Northern Sexism tribe.
Well, yes, I wrote the word sexist in big letters as part of my notes. So I think, yeah.
One of the most badass characters on the show, and she has to deal with this culture that just is utterly demeaning to its women.
And, you know, I think it's... What's interesting about the show is the tribes that are on the quote-unquote good side all have very clear flaws. Is it? I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. Even the air nomads in the flashbacks you end up seeing with Aang explaining his past with them, even there you can see the problems that were inherent to their culture as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost as if no group of people are perfect.
but a lot of shows don't show that, though, do they? I mean, that it shouldn't be a radical thing, but it is. I think Katara's isn't allowed to take part in the bending training, it's, you just feel that frustration. I mean, there's a kind of a bit of sexism earlier on in the show, in terms of Sokka's attitude towards the
Suki very quickly disabuses him of those notions.
She does. It still felt very, like, noughties to me, the way they portrayed. It's like it was clearly, like, showing, like, the error of his, like, of his ways. So it was positive in that sense, but
it was very blunt and simplified there. There, it's individualized, whereas with the Northern Water Tribe, it's clearly institutional. It makes a point about how that problem is institutional.
That's very well put. Exactly. So I think so that was more effective for me.
Yeah.
Because they're showing how it was institutionalized, and the way you could feel Katara's, like, frustration was so powerful, I think. And I hated that trainer character throughout, from that moment. I mean, even though there's a kind of resolution, I still hated him, to be honest.
And that's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can see how much Sokka's developed as a character by the Siege of the North from Warriors of Kyoshi. He's definitely come a long way how much you actually genuinely care about him in that episode.
You do. And he's so courageous and down to earth and you know, like, kind of honest. Like, he really does grow on you over the course of season one, I think. And it really does come full circle. No, not full circle. It develops a lot by the time you reach the finale, and you know it's Huey, isn't it, that he has another romantic entanglement with, and then that touches on the idea of you know, the forced marriage and the kind of the kind of traditions they have in the Northern Water Tribe,
and of course her story also ties quite heavily into the overarching stuff that we started to see back during the Winter Solstice two-parter about the Avatar's role when it comes to the spirits and the spirit world, which in the future will become quite significant.
As in my future, because I've not seen a season three yet.
You haven't, no. But...
not very coy.
But the Avatar's role as the ambassador between humanity and the spirits is significant to the overarching world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why the finale is so great. It's not just this big battle, but it's like the monstrousness of trying to, like, destroy a part of the universe, basically, and the wider impact that has, and the kind of sacrifice to, like, resolve that situation. It's Admiral Zhao, who's a good villain, I think, but I think his best moment is the extent he goes to in the finale. And then when we get to see more of the spirit world and understand more of that, I think. And then we also see, like, Aang in the spirit world in the finale, and, like, Zuko's finally caught up with him, and yeah, there is a real sense of peril, like, when you know, you can't really do anything in that situation.
Yeah. Zuko's obsession has literally driven him, like, to the ends of the world to try and chase down Aang. At that point,
on a fool's errand, which makes it even more tragic, really.
He needs to learn to listen to Iroh.
Everyone should listen to Iroh. Iroh, like, what would Iroh do? Everything should just follow Iroh's advice, really.
I'm pretty sure that is a meme. What would Iroh do?
And let him make all the tea in the world as well.
I would absolutely drink tea with him.
I think I was just thinking a bit of a tangent as well as the sexist trainer guy who I despised. There was Yui's arranged husband to be. I don't think I've ever seen a brattier character written. It's just incredibly irritating, and I think because you pit Sokka against people like that, like, it makes you grow to love Sokka more.
It's a bit of a cheap trick.
It is, but it's effective. But yeah, he's just so... I mean, to be fair, that is quite a common thing, like, where you have a love triangle, but the guy who the woman's meant to be with is just so obnoxiously horrible. It's like, why in your right mind would you ever go near this person? I mean, I of course she doesn't really have a choice, but yeah, I guess it's a bit of a cheap trick and quite a common thing. But yeah, I mean, having seen season two, I think, so season one is great. I'd say season two is actually a step up.
Oh yeah, the show keeps improving. And it keeps just building on what it's done before. I think that's one of the real strengths. Like, season one on its own is good, but they establish so much that then gets built upon with each subsequent season. And that's one of the real strengths of the show.
I totally agree. And what's great is they establish so much, but make it an enjoyable ride. Because I've seen other shows where, you know, there's talk about saying you have to get through, you know, seasons 1, 2, 3, whatever, in order to get to the good bits of the show.
Yeah, Avatar is absolutely not a show like that.
Exactly.
Like Steven Universe, for example, it's generally accepted that it's totally understandable if someone can't make it through season one to when it really gets going.
Yeah.
Because there's so much stuff that just doesn't engage you as much. But yeah, a show like Avatar, it just has you absolutely hooked from the beginning and keeps that pace going.
So I totally agree. So season two is even better, but season one's still great. I think if you're a fan of animation, if you're just a fan of quality TV, you have to see it, I think. I can see why people were shocked that I hadn't seen it.
And why we're so glad now just to see how much you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's great. It would have been great if I'd seen it at the time, but it's, I guess because I've seen so much Dross, like, I appreciate it more now, maybe. it's fantastic. I'm really enjoying it. And once again, it's another show I can, like Shira, where I can watch it with my family and they all enjoy it too.
That's got to be a lovely thing. Yeah. Having something that you can sit down with your whole family and know that they're all going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, my kids tend to gravitate towards copying the Firebending Nation, which concerns me a little bit, but it is really sweet, though, that we can all watch it together. I mean,
it's not that uncommon for your kids to want to, like, to like the style of the bad guys.
I mean, one of my kids actually tried to use water to heal me. As in following the tradition. It's very sweet.
That's so it's a great adorable.
It's a great family show, but adults can and they should watch it. It's just I really think it's a must watch show. I've not been exposed to the movie, that Avatar movie by M. Night Shyamalan.
It wasn't generally well received by fans of the show. I'll leave it at that.
If someone has seen the movie and not seen season one, would your concern be? I mean, I've not seen the movie. I've just heard lots of bad things. It sounds like a worry would be if that put people off from watching the cartoon.
I've encountered people who saw the film and then saw the show, and the general opinion is they were so glad that they did see the show.
You have to. Everyone has to watch the show. I think it's fantastic.
It has such broad appeal.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are really good have fairly niche appeal. That they're really good because of certain things that certain people will like. Avatar very much is a show for everyone.
Yeah. Enough said, I think.
Onwards to season two.
Season two, yes. I'm just loving the show. So in the future episode, we will cover season two, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait to see what season three has in store as well. It's fantastic. So So yeah, definitely check that out. All the seasons are on Netflix. Absolutely fantastic show. So thanks for listening. Leave us a comment. Let us know if there's any favourite moments we've not covered that you want to highlight. We'd love to hear your feedback. And thanks, Amy, as well.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye, everyone.